96.3, and this is, of course, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I'm Robert Norris, and you are whoever you are. So if you want to call in, we're going to be here for 2 hours, and we're going to be talking civil rights in Santa Cruz, my standard topic here. We got a lot of interviews from the streets. We may have a special visit from activist, jailbird, and vindicated juggler, bubble artist Tom Noddy. That may happen later in the show. He's got some personal business to attend to, but he said he might make it in. And we also will be getting some calls from some unusual places. I called the Kucinich for President HQ to get the specifics on what Kucinich's current line was on getting out of Iraq. That is, getting U.S. troops out of Iraq. Having called Representative Farr's office this afternoon and finding out that Representative Farr still has no statement about U.S. troops leaving Iraq. He has refused to call for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. So for all you local progressives who have such confidence in Sam Farr, it's time for you to give a call to Sam at 429. I think it's 1976. That's it. 429-1976. I'm going to check that prefix, either 429 or 427-1976. And before the show's over, I'll tell you what it is. I'm still recovering from the heat. That's my excuse. But call Representative Farr's office. It's in the book. And tell the man on his 24-hour voicemail that, by the way, people are getting killed over there and killing over there. And it's time to cut losses. It's time to stop throwing good lives after other good lives, actually, and to get the U.S. troops out of Iraq and return Iraq to the Iraqi people. If you want to comment on this or any other subject, or why, for example, the Santa Cruz City Council is refusing to weigh in on this issue, though it spent hours and hours of the community's time gathering the data that the community wants the U.S. out of Iraq, maybe you can give them a call, too, and I do know that number. It's 420-5020, 420-5020. Give them a call and tell Mayor Smiley Riley that decorum is nice and baked goods are tasty, but it's important as a public leader, as a community leader in Santa Cruz, as the mayor of our town, that she reintroduce the resolution to remove U.S. troops from Iraq and spearhead that movement. I have not heard of cities doing that, and perhaps Santa Cruz needs to kick that one off, as it actually kicked off a few other things, starting with the U.S. out of Iraq resolutions way back when. That was actually U.S. stay out of Iraq. Now it's U.S. get out of Iraq. So if you want to be involved with this show, you can give me a call at, again, 427-3772. We welcome your calls. I and my other self here, and occasionally mutate into. And you can also reach me on the internet at rnorris@hotmail.com. Actually, that's my email address. You can also check out the HUF website, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's a group I work with concerned with civil rights for poor people, but indeed civil rights for everybody, in public spaces particularly, where it seems more powerful interests, merchant interests, police power, the city manager's long hand have stretched, and what we're now faced with that reality downtown, arrests of people for tabling for more than 60 minutes, arrests of people for juggling, though the city council juggling its PR very nicely dashed in to eliminate that one. We're going to be playing today the juggling item on the agenda, where they declared it was an emergency to change the juggling law, but the other 99 one-hundredths of the law, which under which most of the tickets are issued, much of the harassment is given by poor people, to performers, to other folks downtown, by the police, that law remains the same. And they had no justification, no explanation, just a sort of a bland smile that they're proceeding with their own emergency notions. So it's apparently an emergency to quash one juggling ticket for Tom Noddy, because Tom could, could inspire a lot of juggling in town from some out-of-town performers. It might make Santa Cruz even more of a laughing stock than it is now, at least in terms of the harsh laws it has for fundamentally innocent behavior, whether it's skateboarding, whether it's riding a bicycle the wrong way, whether it's sitting down on the lip of a planter, all these tickets that officers Bechtel and Pollock are eager and ready to give you citations for downtown on Pacific Avenue, all under the aegis of the Downtown Association, the City Council, the Redevelopment Agency, and the Police Department, the City Manager's Office, that somehow feels that they have another vision of Santa Cruz than I think is the commonly shared vision. Well, let's see what we got here. I'm going to begin with a few downtown interviews, and we'll take it from there, probably revert to the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of last week. I rushed to the library to try to get the agenda, and I found the City Council had not delivered the agenda to the library. They don't mind passing it on to council members, but if you try and get the agenda yourself, or ask the City Council, let's say, to leave an agenda outside the City Council offices because they close at 5, they won't do that. You have to be there before they close. You are discouraged from being in the offices of the City Council. The way they discourage you now is all activity now takes place in the library, but it's, of course, delayed to some extent because the library is there's a sort of a bureaucratic process that takes place, even though the library is across the street from the City Council in downtown Santa Cruz. So if you want to read the staff reports, if you want to find out what's going on, you've got to go to the library to do it, and this is a way, of course, insulating council members, staff members from members of the public. I mean, why should they have to deal with the public? They're only public officials, after all. I myself have, of course, felt the lash of the displeasure of City Council members when Mayor, or I used to call him Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, who was mayor in 2000. He was mayor 2000, in 1999, 2000. He, that's not true, 2000, 2001 he was mayor. He got upset because we, three of us, were lobbying for the inclusion, expansion of a homeless shelter in the winter. Three of us from Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Actually, it was about 20 of us, but three of us in the main were there much of the time when we came in the morning and asked to speak to council members, and we said we'd wait until a council member would speak to us. And eventually, they concocted a bogus injunction to get rid of us that tied us up in court for 6 months and was eventually dismissed by Judge Stevens. But during that period of time, thanks to Fitzmaurice and his efforts on behalf of his secretary, whom he essentially cowered behind in this matter, Anna Brooks, claiming to be representing her interests, that we were harassing her by asking for change for $20 bills and asking for copies of things and making rude comments about the mayor and the things of that sort. Anyway, the insulation of the public from the city offices continues, and unfortunately I don't have the agenda for you at the moment. I'm going to see if it's online. I doubt it, but I'm going to take a look. In the meantime, let's listen to a bit of this.
It's about 15 to 3 on July 16, 2003. We're down on Pacific Avenue in front of the Pacific Trading Company talking with
Daniel Vendetta.
Daniel, what happened? You say you got some sort of your bicycle didn't meet the approval of the police department?
I got a ticket for not wearing a helmet because they think I look like a gangster or something. And it's like not totally true, and I'm not in a gang. And
you mean you're not a gangster? Is this what you're trying to tell us? But you obviously are a gang, unless you can prove you're innocent. How do we know you're not really Al Capone?
Do I look like Al Capone?
Well, he'd be a little older, I admit.
Right.
So, when did you get this ticket?
A couple of minutes ago.
And where did you get it?
On an alleyway, back by a movie theater.
Is this the movie theater down this way, the Cinema 9?
Yeah.
And what, would you know the name of the police officer who gave it to you? Why don't you whip out that? I got a nice yellow ticket there. Let's have a look. Say ticket to Daniel Vendetta. Looks like, yeah, officer. Oh, it was a woman.
Yes.
A short woman in light blue.
Yes.
Officer Bechtel. She loves to give out tickets. Had you been warned about the helmet situation?
Yes.
So had she warned you?
Yes.
So she was, in essence, ticketing you after warning you. And what was the situation? Are you, What did she say to you?
She basically said, if I see you again, I'll give you a ticket, and I was trying to avoid her, like, going on the right road and staying, like, not where traffic was, and she was back there and stopped me.
She nabbed you.
Yeah, I was riding by, and she stopped me. Yeah.
Now what's the story? When did you get this warning from her?
About half an hour ago, down in front of...
Half an hour ago. So she expected you to go buy a helmet in the next half hour?
She expected me to go home or something. When I live, like, half a mile away. And how would I get home going that way when I live the other way?
Well, you could always hire a taxi and get home that way, or possibly you could get two friends to carry your bicycle, unless they had, of course, helmets, then they could perhaps ride your bicycle home, or possibly you could store your bicycle in one of the stores if you paid them enough, or maybe you could dismantle and sell your bicycle. No, that would be illegal on Pacific Avenue. You can't sell your bicycle. There's got to be a way out of this. I know. We'll give you a ticket. That worked. So you now have a ticket, right?
Yes.
And let's see what this ticket says. This ticket says, no helmet under 18 years old. How old are you?
15 and a half.
Okay, now, have you ever run into this kind of concern before? Has anyone ever told you you can't ride without a helmet?
No.
And how long have you been riding a bicycle?
All my life.
And have you been in...
Since I was basically 10 years of not riding with a helmet, I get stopped today.
And how long have you lived in Santa Cruz?
13 years.
So this is the first time you were ever stopped by a police officer, and the police have seen you riding before.
Yes.
But Officer Bechtel decided today that this was your unlucky day.
I guess so.
Well, I encourage you to go to the library, the law library, which is across the river. Go to the law librarian and say, she's in the basement of the county building, I want to get a copy of the law. Read this law carefully. I know it sounds like a lot of bullshit, and it is, but you have to read the law to find out what your defenses are and also what you need, if anything, to correct it. It may be a correctable offense, haha. Although why you should get a ticket for the first time in 13 years for doing something you've always done is unclear to me.
I know. I've been riding. I ride by the county building at least twice, or if not four times a day. Right around where other cops are, they see me all the time, and I'm riding downtown, and she stops me, and it's like a nice day, and I've gone through there nicer days, but it's why today?
Well, because you came within Officer Bechtel's sights. Officer Bechtel is an officer who has a hard time keeping her ticket book in her pocket.
I don't know what to say. I'm just outraged. It's like, why today? I don't know what to say. I'm just...
Here, here. Now, here I see your friend is committing a criminal offense, just as that man was, by sitting on the railing. I want you to know that's a $162 offense. Ah, and there's a man leaning with his foot, another criminal offense, a violation of the public conduct. That's what we're doing out here. We're trying to stop these crappy laws. I mean, we think it's nonsense. Yes.
Why we're spitting on buildings, huh?
Well, spitting is also an offense if you fling globules through the air. But that's commonly regarded as more condemnable than sitting on a railing, which seemed, or biking without a helmet in a situation where you really didn't have an opportunity to go buy a helmet. What she wants you to do? She wants you to patronize a downtown store? Was this her way of drumming up business?
She wanted me to go all the way home when I'm out here having a good time to go and get a helmet. And it's like my house is all the way across the river, good half a mile away, and stop having fun just to go get a helmet. And I was just about to go and see a movie, and now it's like
you're bummed out.
My whole day is ruined.
Well, try not to let these should we say overzealous officers, to be kind, ruin your day. Here's a man who went to jail for 5 days apparently for playing Risk in the park. It's a real risk playing Risk in the park. Let me give you the phone number to call here, and we'll take this further. Any ticket problems, hassles, concerns? That's what we're talking about.
Tickets. What would you do if someone broke into your house?
Whoa.
Probably call the cops, huh? Because you're...
Or a friend, you know. I mean, or I don't know what I'd do. It depends on the circumstances. You know, if the person was already breaking in, you'd have to deal with it, right?
With a gun or something, you'd call the cops. Go for the cops.
I would probably run down the road and either call friends or the police, one of the two.
So you're bad-mouthing the police, but you'd call...
No, I'm bad-mouthing the way a police officer treated this person and the laws that police are enforcing on Pacific Avenue. I don't think they're good laws.
But isn't this good? It keeps transients off the bench right here.
Yeah. Well, transients, like, with wrinkled shirts and younger people sometimes are people that get hassled, though. So that's the problem.
You can't have transients.
What did you get a ticket for? Freaking a dog?
Here, well, let's do an interview. I'm going to interview with this guy here.
Okay.
So, Doc, why don't you give us the story? You've got a sign that says, I was arrested for playing Risk in a park.
What's Risk?
The board game, you know, kind of a world conquest game. The cop left my stuff there. Now I have no ID, no work, need a job. My birthday, gotta spell that properly, is Friday. No work, no birthday. Please help. Thank you. God bless. Smile and peace be with you. So give us the story. What happened, Doc? I mean, were you in fact molesting younger women? What was going on here? Selling dope, perhaps? Hurling curses at the police? What was that?
I was sitting there playing a game, and Seely and his little crony boys came up and arrested me for playing Risk.
Now, where were you sitting?
Sitting on the bench at Friendly Park in Harvey West.
You playing with little girls?
Oh.
I was making jokes. See, I don't think he was doing anything. So, you were sitting there. Did you have any illegal equipment? Would you have some weaponry, perhaps? Or were you urinating in public?
Nope. We were just sitting there playing.
So you were sitting there playing this board game?
Yeah.
How many of you were there?
There was four of us.
And what happened? How many police officers approached you?
There was three of them. Three of them that were in plain clothes, and they came up to the bench, and they go, oh, that's interesting. Police, is there anything illegal in them bags that we should know about? And they grabbed them and start going through them without asking about anything.
And did you say at any point, please don't go through my stuff?
Didn't even have a chance to say a word.
I see. And what did the police, they went through, how many people's possessions did they go through?
They went through three people's bags and left mine sitting there. Because my bag is 155-pound backpack, my Alpine. And they left it sitting there along with everything else I owned.
Right.
And now I don't have nothing. And last night I slept with nothing. The last few days I slept with nothing.
So when did this happen?
I was arrested on, it's been a week now since I've been out. Or it's been a week. I've been out since Monday. So it was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So
you were arrested last Wednesday?
Yeah.
A week ago?
Yeah.
Now, you weren't arrested for playing Risk or for having a big backpack. What were you arrested for?
Sitting there playing Risk on a bench.
No, but I mean, what did they say the charge was?
They tried to charge me with loitering, and they couldn't charge me with loitering, so then they tried to charge me with an open container, which I blew a 00, which means I didn't have no alcohol. Then they turned around and said a warrant. And when I got to the sheriff's office, there was no warrant.
Okay, now let me see if I understand this. First, they tried to charge you with...
loitering.
And what happened there? How did that conversation go?
I said, how can you charge somebody for loitering in a public park when that's what it's here for?
And what did they say to that?
Then they said, we're going to get you for an open container. And I says, well, that's kind of funny because I ain't drinking and there ain't no alcohol.
And who was saying this? You know which police officer?
That was Seely.
Were there any other names of the officers with him?
There's two other officers. I got one that signed the ticket. But the other two would not sign the ticket except the rookie officer.
Looks like you're showing me the field arrest report is with D. Brierly, 174, Harvey West Park, Friendship Garden, 710, arrest date, and of course, Doc Waite, and your name is W-A-I-T-E. So you were eventually arrested for a warrant, and what happened? Did they say what the warrant was about?
No, they couldn't even find the warrant.
So they took you to jail?
They took me to jail, kept me there for 5 days, and they also gave me a fine that I can't pay because I can't work because I have no ID.
Fining you for?
Court fees.
Now?
And booking. I got a $135 booking charge.
Did you plead guilty to anything?
No.
So how could, you have a trial coming up?
Yep.
And what's the charge?
A warrant.
Well, they have to give you a charge. What's the charge?
That's the charge, warrant. That's what it says, warrant. They okay. don't have anything else
were
on
you, were you arraigned? Were you taken to court or were you released prior to court?
I was released after I seen the judge.
What did the judge say when your case came up?
If I had come up with the $280, I won't have to come back to court.
What did he say you were charged with?
He didn't. It says warrant. They don't understand what's going on.
So the judge said there's a warrant but didn't tell you what you were charged with?
Yeah, that's it.
And which judge was it?
It was a female. I don't know her name.
A cow, perhaps? Well, she was, okay. And you were held in, now you say that when they came, you had a huge backpack. What happened to your backpack?
They left it in the park, along with everything else I owned, what was in my backpack.
And that included items such as?
Birth certificate, social security card, money, my backpack.
How much money?
Almost $800. I had it saved up so, because I'm going to head to Alaska to go to work. They cost me a $43,000 contract.
And what would that contract have been with?
It would have been with Arctic Alaska Fisheries.
So you're actually seeking out an attorney now?
Yes, I have one that I have to talk to tomorrow, but I cannot say his name or anything.
Okay. Now, you say that, so they didn't take your backpack, they left that behind. Did you ask your backpack be taken?
Yeah, I said, what about my backpack? He said, you are not going to need it. And then they said, it says right here on this piece of paper that one backpack safekeeping, but when I went to property, there's nothing there. So that tells me that they didn't even bring it in.
Were you able to see what the police did with the backpack from where you were handcuffed, I take it?
They handcuffed me, put me in the car and drove away, and the other two walked away. I watched the other two walk away as I'm going down the road, and I know my pack was still sitting there. When I got to the county jail, I asked the sheriff, the gentleman, which has been around for a long, long time, he remembers me from the troll days. And
which gentleman is that?
Oh, that's his name right there.
Oh, Steve Carr. Yeah, what did he say? He's a deputy at the jail.
Yeah, he made the officer sign this piece of paper, and he said one backpack safekeeping. And he was the witness of the officer saying that they had my gear.
I see. And have you talked to him since?
I haven't talked to him yet. I still got to.
Interesting. And this was all Wednesday. About what time?
The arresting time was 5:45.
Looking at the field arrest report, the yellow sheet of paper you have with you. Now, how did the police officers treat you in custody otherwise? Were they abusive or brutal or rude in any way?
Actually, the sheriffs were really nice. But the Santa Cruz police was really a prick, but the sheriffs were really cool. They were, you know, a lot of people say all the officers are bad, but not all of them. There's a few bad ones out there, and we still got to get rid of them.
You were then held in, you were what, how long did it take you to get from the jail holding cell to the general population?
About 3 hours.
And how were things in the general population? What cell block were you on?
I was in E, and it was crowded.
What kind of people
on the floor.
What kind of folks are in E?
Gangbangers, Latinos.
How were you treated?
Some of the guys tried to push me around. Needless to say, what goes on in jails is goes on jail.
Right.
You get pushed, you push back. That's all. But all in all, I was treated pretty good, except there was two officers. There's one guy, a jailer in there. He's a really, really prick. And,
do we know his name?
No. He goes, you're in places you shouldn't have been. He was really nasty. And then the nurse, I told him that I had glaucoma and stuff, and they turned my files over to psych, trying to say I needed psych meds.
And what did the psychiatrist say?
I didn't get to see him.
Well, here you are. Obviously, you're going to have to come to our little stand here. We have a two-cent psychiatric stand. We can give you a quick analysis if you'd like.
Yeah, I'm insane. Because
you're
like
in
work.
Santa Cruz. Ah! We won't get into that. So you were finally taken to court. You saw a female judge, and I think that may be Judge Acow. Was she Asian American?
I think so. I don't remember much. I remember I was released. She seen the paperwork and stuff, gave me court fee date, gave me a 14-day thing that I had to do, which is my fine. They charged me $100-some just for paperwork, for, what do they call that, filing fees. So, and I'm going to call, gonna call them up tomorrow and say I can't pay nothing because I have no ID to get work.
So when is your next court date?
I don't have one.
Well, there was a warrant issued for your... You were fined on the basis... Still arguing.
They told me if I come up with the money, I won't have to go to court. If I got 14 days to pay a fine. If I don't pay the fine, I get a warrant.
What is the fine for, though?
For being in the park. It's called filing fees. They charge you for being in jail now.
So they want you to... Wait a minute. No, they have to find you guilty of something before they can even begin to charge you for jail. I mean, that's my understanding.
When you go to jail, the sheriffs start booking you.
I understand, but you don't pay for the booking fee until after you're found guilty. I mean, they'll bill it to you if you're found guilty. If you're not found guilty, you don't get booked.
Well,
I mean, you get booked, but you don't have to pay for it.
This is why I want this lawyer, because I don't know what's going on, and neither does anybody else.
Don't do business with bigotry downtown.
Go ahead.
It's a lot of shit. I don't understand what's going on. I need a lawyer to figure out everything. The judge couldn't understand what the charges were because there was no charge at first. Then Seeley came in, and it's just a bunch of crap. I think they're just holding the grudge against me because me and Seeley goes back a long way.
You've had some, should we say, bad experiences with Officer Seeley?
Mr. Eric himself used to be a troll buster, and we all know that.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I can't really get into it now because it's all... Troll busters were kids that are today's cops, for one. They used to go around and beat us homeless people up for fun.
Did you actually ever see Eric Seeley beat anybody up?
Eric Seeley has a scar.
And where is that scar?
It should be on his shoulder.
And what's that scar from?
Him and his little gang buddies coming in the Popenip one night trying to beat us up.
And when was that, more or less?
That was in 1981, right after the earthquakes and the floods we had in 81. And that summer, also, the Bazooka Kids came out.
And the Bazooka Kids were?
A couple of kids that made a homemade bazooka and blew a dude's shoulder off.
This was a homeless man's shoulder?
Yeah.
Were these youths who did the bazookaing house themselves? Were they upper middle class?
They're rich kids. The first thing they asked when they walked into court was, "Will this keep us out of the military?"
You actually saw the court proceeding?
Yeah, I was a witness.
You were a witness for prosecution?
Yep. I was there. It was my friend that got blown up. He's still alive, but he's kind of messed up still today. I mean, look at what they did to Happy. They shot Happy.
Happy John Dine in 1997. What was the name of your friend who was hit with a bazooka?
He went by the name of Tony, but that wasn't his real name. Nobody really knew who he really was, because back in those days, we never used our real names because it was too dangerous.
So what are your plans now, Doc, for dealing with this situation?
I'm going to talk to the lawyer, see what he has to say, and try to get my stuff back. Because I'm still trying to get to Alaska so I can go to work.
So ironically, the vindictive police action has kept you here in town.
Yeah, they stranded me here. I mean, without my ID, I can't do anything. I can't even go buy a bus ticket without any ID. So I'm stuck.
Thank you, Doc.
And I can't work because no ID, no work.
We've actually done a longer interview about your previous activist work in Portland. We're going to talk more about that. It's about 6:15 on Wednesday afternoon after a club cruise, actually two club cruise shows, one involving Doc Waite, actually, that was you, Doc, and the other having Steve Argue on and Jim Ross on talking about the arrests under the move-along law. Doc, you were talking about troll busting, giving a critique of Officer Seeley. Making some serious charges, I might add. But I noticed when we came out of there, Becky Johnson, who is using my red vehicle, got two tickets on her vehicle within 56 minutes. And I was parked in another car, got another ticket for expired meter. We're talking expired meter tickets, so it's kind of interesting that they seem to be paying very close attention to vehicles with stickers on. We're in front of Logo's bookstore on Pacific, and you were
sitting too close to that.
Where were you sitting?
Right here.
Oh, next to the fire hydrant. No, I'm afraid this is Officer Bechtel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm afraid that she was in error. You are allowed to sit within, you can actually sit right next to a news rack, however, you
she
can.
I could be within 14 feet of it.
Were you soliciting?
I had my little sign out.
What did your sign say?
It said, I was arrested for playing Risk.
Right. Well, even if you requested money.
They just requested a job, not money.
But whatever it requested, it doesn't matter. No, the news racks are not included. Again, Officer Bechtel has drawn a zero in her comprehension of the downtown panhandling ordinance. Perhaps we can educate her the next time we see her.
So, Becky, we're here. It's about 7:25 at this car, which is written on it, needs clutch, tow me $400, in a parking space right in front of mine where I just got a ticket for, I guess, being 9 minutes overtime on, what's the street?
This is Maple.
Maple Street. And you're noting that there are two parking tickets. One is today from 7:16 on this car, and there's a warning for vehicle parked in violation of the law because it's left unattended, dated 7:10, which means it has to be moved within 72 hours.
And all this is very interesting, but the bottom line here is that zealous CSOs, those are the police officers in light blue, are apparently now patrolling the mall, giving out parking tickets, but specifically giving out parking tickets for vehicles covered with bumper stickers, which there are a few on the mall, and I'm associated with two of them. So it's interesting. Indeed, if a police officer finds an expired meter, they certainly have the right to give an obligation, might even say. Although I would say if it's a CSO, it's more the right, because it's usually meter attendants who give parking tickets, not CSOs. They usually have other duties to attend to, and they begin very zealously being concerned with particular individuals' cars and giving out parking tickets specifically to those people. It makes me uneasy. Of course, it makes me particularly uneasy when it's me, but that's another story. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We've had a kind of a quiet week downtown, those of us who have been tabling at the Pacific Trading Company, asking that folks boycott the Pacific Trading Company and the Jackson's Shoes, the store next to it. Now, the reason for the boycott, the support of these stores, the kind of leading support for anti-homeless laws, laws that very severely restrict performers and essentially broaden police harassment powers downtown very expansively, and that have resulted through the city manager action and city council action in producing a much more, I gotta say it, police state-ish downtown, where people feel unwelcome if they are of a particular lifestyle, dress, and age, or less welcome, let's say. It's all being kind of covered up under the rubric of stuff like Ed Porter, Councilmember Porter's claims that the downtown is not a playground, that if you want to go play volleyball, you should go to a park. And nobody plays volleyball downtown. But indeed, some people used to play hacky sack, but this offended a few merchants. And apparently, I don't know, caused a couple of complaints from a few residents. And it became the basis for first a fence at the New Leaf Market a year and a half ago that walled off two-thirds of the sidewalk and gave it away to Alibaba's Cafe, New Leaf Market, and Sushi Now. New Leaf Market actually was only a sometime user of that area, tried to keep a low profile after all. I didn't want to disturb its progressive image. And then we saw the removal of benches in front of the Pacific Cookie Company, in front of Borders, and finally the sort of behind-the-scenes slimy use of public funds to destroy seating space by moving the railing on the walnut planter in front of the Pacific Trading Company out 4 inches so that there was no place to sit. And now when people sit there, at the discretion of the officer, if you're an activist, you'll get a ticket. If you're not an activist, and if you're middle class, he will probably ignore you. At least that's what I observed. Well, at least on two occasions, I was going to say repeatedly, but Sergeant Baker gave out one ticket to a man sitting on the fence, and I must say that recently, and ignored others who are in middle-class dress, but recently the police have been ignoring people sitting on the fence, and they've been ignoring people who have been tabling. That's been another law that has been passed by city council to discourage political activists downtown. Actually, it's to discourage poor people downtown, in my view, and has swept up activists downtown. The 60-minute move-along law, which says we can only have a political table for 60 minutes in one place on the mall. Now, last time on the air, I played the last city council meeting's discussion of exemption zones. This is part of the kind of patch-up token job being done by the city council rather than really re-examine these downtown ordinances that make it illegal to sit within 14 feet of a building on the sidewalk or to ask peacefully for a dime within 14 feet of a building if you're there, and bars it entirely, even if you sit silently with a sign, if you're doing it at night or if you do it in a group of two or if you do it, as I said, in a seated position. To look at whether these laws are, in fact, really a form of, blank check for the police to go down the street and pick out people that they decide don't belong and go after them, or to see even if they've worked, to look at the stats in terms of arrests, to look at the stats in terms of complaints, to take some public testimony and to see how it's going, and actually to fix up what they said they were going to fix up, and that included such things as putting out accurate maps to really show how much of the sidewalk they've actually walled off from public use with invisible walls that essentially say you can't sit within 14 feet of a building up and down, not just Pacific Avenue, you can't sit within 14 feet of a building and you can't have a table within 10 feet of a building or play a musical instrument with a display device within 10 feet of a building, which of course eliminates playing within next to most buildings that are not on Pacific Avenue in Santa Cruz. But of course, Michael Rotkin and Scott Kennedy might tell you, well, they don't enforce that. You see, that's okay, because they don't enforce that. It may be the law, but they don't enforce that. But the idea of giving all these powers to police to enforce what they want makes me uneasy and perhaps makes others uneasy. If it makes you uneasy, give a call, 427-3772. If it doesn't, I think it's a good idea. Let me hear from you, too. I'd like to know what you think about that. Kennedy and Primack were supposed to come back, I understand it's pronounced Primack, and worked together to set up these exemption zones, which supposedly would be free of either, it's not entirely clear, the move-along law or the 10-foot restriction. And that actually is what we began to play last time. We played some of that discussion. And I'm going to actually play that discussion again because I think it's interesting and bears on, well, what's coming up at City Council next Tuesday, or perhaps what's not coming up but should be coming up, which is a six-month examination of these downtown ordinances, which are not found in any other town. There is no other town that has a move-along law for political tables that I've ever heard of. If anybody's heard of it, please let me know. I do know in some Nevada towns, I think they bar tabling, and they also make it require that if you're going to table, you have to have a table that has all the Victorian frippery that the town has, something like that. But Santa Cruz, I had thought, and I think many of us had thought, was a different kettle of fish, but apparently not. Other things the city council is supposed to be doing on next Tuesday is they're supposed to have done this over the last 6 months. The city manager is supposed to have developed streamlined administrative procedures for over-the-counter permits for longer performance periods due to the need for setup equipment and addressing issues of amplification. Not done, as far as I know. The council members Fitzmaurice, Rotkin, the city manager, and the city attorney worked together to develop language that addresses discretionary enforcement by police of these ordinances. Not done, as far as I know. That when problems and informal processes fail, the council could give direction to the mayor, commission, task force, or conflict resolution board at the mayor's direction to convene the stakeholders in order to work to ensure that adequate public information and maps are available to host city staff and police as soon as possible. Actually, I skipped that. Stakeholders are supposed to work out, the mayor is supposed to work out problems if there's a problem between the stakeholders where they can actually sit down and mediate. None of that has happened. Instead, they simply call in the police and enforce the laws against poor people, musicians, and political activists. And then there's supposed to be, city attorney is supposed to work with Councilmember Matthews and Mayor Riley to consider amendments to appropriate ordinances that amends the display device language to exempt small containers like a cup, if you're a poor person, or a little teeny device so you could have something where people could put money in your cup if you're playing an instrument. And maybe you wouldn't have to use a larger guitar case. It might arguably, though in fact I've never heard of it, this is actually happening, have some sort of obstructive problem on the sidewalk. that's the pretext they're using for this ordinance. It's somehow to ensure the public ways. This is the excuse that where they presented no documentation whatsoever that this was ever a problem. And as I said, the only thing they went into was exemption zones. Now let's hear a little bit of that again.
Exemption zones on Pacific Avenue. The recommendation is that the City Council adopt a resolution designating two exemption zones on Pacific Avenue adjacent to the Tom Scribner statue and the Planter Garden at the Locust Street intersection. Mr. Wilson? You want to discuss it? Okay. There were some people from the community who wanted to discuss this. Would you come forward, please?
And I'm not going to interrupt this as much as I did last time, but I just want to point out the exemption zones that they're talking about are tiny. They involve essentially a 2 or 3 foot area around the Tom Scribner statue in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, and a 2 or 3 foot area around the walnut, not the walnut, the planter right next to the Scribner statue. So it would essentially be a proposal that legalizes where the WILF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, a favored group of the City Council, already tables. So this is a way of making sure that they don't offend that particular group or drive them into opposition. So they will, of course, remain quiet while the rest of us get hauled away. And it's kind of unfortunate that the activist community gets split up this way, but that, in fact, is what's happened. WILF has issued no protests, even though 3 people have been arrested from Huff tables for trying to essentially raise the issue of bad public policy and urge people to boycott stores that press laws that criminalize poor people, to wit, Jackson's Shoes and the Pacific Trading Company. Also note, the city manager asked to testify says nothing. The answer, of course, is the reason he doesn't is because this is a done deal, and it was on what we call the consent agenda, which is the agenda that would normally be passed without any kind of discussion or vote, except when the public or council members pull the items off and ask that they be talked about. When we did, they threw them ahead 4 hours, so that we had to wait 4 hours to talk about them, and some of us didn't wait. Some of us just left. Some of us left and happened to come back at a time when they happened to begin to be talking about it. Otherwise, they would have succeeded in their objective of essentially getting these items through with no discussion at all.
Go. Julie's here.
3 minutes.
Involved with us here for sure.
Oh, good. Okay, we have Julie here if we have questions, and we'll have 3 minutes apiece, please.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi. Joe Williams, Santa Cruz Peace Coalition. Just want to thank Scott for some follow-through on this. Glad to see it on the agenda, seeing it move forward, at least for discussion. I just wanted to, check and make sure that there was a downtown commission email or from one of the commissioners that I didn't see in the binder, and I just wanted to check that those concerns.
We all received an email from Mr. Guzley.
Yeah.
Mr. Guzley.
Yeah. Yes, we did.
You all got that. I just didn't see it in the binder, so I wanted to make sure his concerns were represented, especially regarding the merchants. There's been a lot of talk about previous ordinances about property owners being properly noticed and stuff, and I think this is one of the cases if you're setting up exemptions zones in front of merchants that the same kind of policy would apply. And I guess some just general concerns about the continuing dialogue with the Downtown Commission, merchants, and other stakeholders regarding this issue still move forward and continue. And also to ask if there's other space to be considered besides these two in the works. So just some general concerns at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Matthew Hartog, a resident of Santa Cruz. I have a concern about establishing these exemption zones because the process seems to be somewhat arbitrary. According to your handouts, the criterion for establishing these zones is to allow the movement of pedestrians without blockages and so on. By that criterion, the space in front of the across from Cinema 9 would probably be better. It's a much bigger space. But one might have some concerns about equal protection challenges if a lawyer decides to take the tack that the City Council might be playing favorites in terms of the particular political groups which it is favoring by this geographical placement as opposed to others. So that's it.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
What? Son of our screws.
How would picking a space be?
Hi. Hi, I'm Sherry Carnival. As the mayor suggested, we should not do. I did send you an email late this morning, and I'm sure you haven't had a chance to read that. It was partly in reference to Bob Guzley's email to you, in which I understood that he was saying he felt like some of the language of this recommendation misrepresented the feedback from the Downtown Commission in terms of the whole issue of exemption zones and were they a good idea or weren't they. I have some other questions that I just wanted to put on the table. There has been information kind of out there since the planter in front of Pacific Trading Company was altered and the railing was moved, that the city has plans to move the railings on the other three similar planters on the
In fact, the Downtown Commission generally favored the downtown ordinances, though there were some members of the Downtown Commission who opposed them. So Kennedy was in error in that, and I don't know whether he's consciously falsifying or whether he's simply sloppy and doesn't, you know, isn't doing his homework here. I would be happy to discuss or debate it with him, but he's unwilling to go on a show with me. It's been proposed to him that he discuss debate the downtown ordinances with me. He's declared he won't do that. And in fact, when he was invited, I'm told by my producer, six times on free radio, he accepted six times, and six times he was a no-show. Though it has to be said that he did show up on George's show, Old Lady Scar Arms, on Sunday, a couple of weekends ago when Steve Argy was arrested. I guess that was July 6th. It's also interesting, the reason for the exemption zones being proposed was because, in fact, activity for political tailors and musicians, not to mention people who want to just sit down legally somewhere on the sidewalk, has been vastly cut back. And Kennedy's claim that you can perform almost anywhere except in certain instances is simply false. 75% of the sidewalk is removed for performing purposes if you have any kind of display device. And because of the failure of City Council to define display devices in such a way that small cups aren't display devices, any time a performer has a cup out, that's a display device. They have to be 10 feet from a fountain, a telephone, a crosswalk, a kiosk, a building, an intersection, a bench. There's a whole series of obstructions that essentially eliminate more than 75% of the sidewalk, and then the rest of it is made more difficult by the fact that there are bike racks there and that people are getting in and out of cars. And so the natural place to be, which is by businesses, sometimes closed businesses, often closed businesses, is now criminalized, and the police will go after you. If you are a musician playing near a closed business with a display device, that's illegal. So Kennedy is simply not telling the truth, or perhaps he doesn't know the truth. It's hard to believe that after 13 years on the council, he wouldn't know the truth about this situation. I think it's had, 9 years with these laws. He's the one who helped pass them initially in 1994 and helped pass them again in the summer of 2002 and then made them even worse in the winter of 2003. He makes comments about people being arrested by following police officers and jaywalking 500 times. I crossed the street once. I didn't ask the police to arrest me. I was simply detained by Officer Phelps and given a jaywalking ticket for the first time in my life on Pacific Avenue. And it was clearly, at least that was what other people felt too, a punitive move because I had raised the issue of a CSO giving my car a parking ticket, when, as I mentioned earlier in the show, CSOs are not usually in the habit of giving out parking tickets on Pacific Avenue. And this was the same CSO, Officer Pollock, who had been surveilling our table in front of the Pacific Trading Company, which we were urging a boycott of, all afternoon and timing us. This was on the afternoon of June 24th. In case Mr. Kennedy is listening and wants to check out the police logs, that's what he'll find. It's interesting that he does say, Councilmember Kennedy says, reports are due on the 22nd, which is next Tuesday. I checked the agenda, And unfortunately, and as I feared, there is no agenda for the 22nd, though the agenda is out for the council members, but not for us lowly mortals. We don't get to read it, just the high and mighty council members. There is also a strange, by the way, agenda item for the 22nd from 1 to 2 in the city manager's conference room, which is there's a presentation on the likely impact the city will experience from county budget cuts. If anybody's interested in that issue, it's completely irrelevant to everything else, but I thought I'd mention it just to confuse you and also to let you know that that is a kind of a little council meeting that's coming up the day before the main council meeting. It's between 1 and 2, and it's in essentially the main city council offices, not the city hall. It's at city hall, but it's not in the council chambers. You got to go to the council offices, which is the next building over. But Kennedy is supposed to have this stuff out by the 22nd. At least he made that promise. Though last Monday he told the Bill of Rights Committee that he would not necessarily have it on the agenda. So it's not clear what is being done, and I will hopefully report back to you on Sunday what the situation is. He claims the exemption zones have been successful up to now. Well, there haven't been any exemption zones. First of all, prior to 1994, everywhere was an exemption zone, except where you were violating the law. And then, of course, appropriately, you were hassled. And often in some places, you were hassled where you weren't violating the law, such as sitting on a low-lying planter, which is the law the police use selectively to harass the people they don't like the looks of, or they want to move along, or they just, or maybe they're feeling their oats. And it's just bad. I don't know what to say. It shows lack of observation powers or some kind of primary bias on Kennedy's part that he doesn't recognize that there have been numerous complaints about police inappropriately enforcing these laws and these laws open to selective enforcement. He doesn't seem to want to acknowledge that or even investigate it or talk about it. Instead, he distorts it and turns it around and makes it appear that, oh, it's a bunch of activists who want to get arrested, that the bubble man tried to get arrested for blowing bubbles. Well, actually, of course, Tom Noddy is the bubble man, but he wasn't arrested for blowing bubbles. He was arrested for juggling, and he didn't want to get arrested. He just wanted the police to make their policy clear. And it's unfortunate that the city has to be so misinformed by council members about this issue, and then, of course, that'll be faithfully parroted by Dan White of the Sentinel, who doesn't seem to give the other side 2 cents worth of time. But that, unfortunately, is the situation we're stuck in, and that's where we're at. Let's hear some more of the city council meeting from July 8th, the exemption zones, which, again, is the fig leaf that the city council is putting over their blank check to the police to criminalize all but 15 or 20% of the sidewalk for performing and 5% of the sidewalk for sitting. It's kind of the merchants get 95%, you get 5% approach.
Well, yeah, I can support the motion. I also would like to observe that I think many of us are witness to a systematic campaign of harassment and bullying and intimidation on Pacific Avenue. And we've watched in dismay people who have shown the courage to stand up and speak and in an attempt to address the issues suffer greatly downtown. And I would like to echo Cynthia's previous comments and encourage people in Santa Cruz to come downtown and shop downtown and start with the brave stores of Jackson Shoes and Pacific Trading, which have suffered tremendously for the crime of attempting to express their concerns.
Thank you, Mark. Ed?
Well, I want to join with Mark's remarks on that subject. I think there is a mean-spirited tabling effort going on, targeted at those stores that he just mentioned. And I think it's a myth to say that those stores somehow engineered the downtown ordinance. It's a complete myth, I know, because I was there. And I think it's laudable that they would log the unpleasant occurrences that were taking place in front of those stores. Just for the record, I want to say, well, not really just for the record, but so that it is visible to the public, the gentleman in red shirt who says that there's good activities going on in front of those stores that he's trying to save. Well, the people in the stores logged things like people vomiting in front of their stores, urinating in front of their stores, shouting epithets into their stores on a daily routine basis. So if these people are trying to defend that kind of activity, why don't they just say so instead of trying to create a myth that in fact that is wonderful, spirited activity in our downtown? I'm sorry, it is not.
There's really not too much to be said about what Ed Porter is saying, which is a complete distortion of the objections many of us have to the downtown ordinances. Yes, there is harassment and a campaign of harassment going on downtown, as Mark Premack points out. That, of course, is being conducted by the police against people that it finds to be undesirable in the area and against young people generally, to put them on computer lists so that they can be kept track of. That is the reality of what's happening in Santa Cruz and has been happening for the last decade. People who live on the west side up in their middle-class houses don't seem to recognize that reality. They don't really suffer much in terms of consequences from it, and maybe they imagine that they benefit from it. Urination, vomiting, all these things are criminal behavior which can be punished. And the idea that somehow Porter is so unable to answer our arguments that he has to mischaracterize what we're saying because he doesn't want to address the issue, which is, why should it be criminal for someone to be in, to be, have a table for 61 minutes? Where are the problems that justify harassing musicians and moving them on that have come up that are actually documentable? And the answer is he has no documentation for any of this stuff. He's simply defending a position he took last summer when he and Riley, in a foolish, hasty, and mean-spirited series of actions essentially initiated by Candy Jackson of Jackson's Shoes with her petition, passed a series of laws that put 95% of the sidewalk out of bounds for people sitting and peacefully soliciting, panhandling, if you will. Yes, poor people panhandling. Not abusively, even just silently with a sign. That all became illegal, except in very small areas. And even in those areas, the police have different tools to harass, as John Moorer will tell you. That's the man who got so fed up with the tickets he was getting, he put a little sign in his hat that said, "Fuck the pigs," and he got another ticket for that. You see, there is no First Amendment in Santa Cruz if the police decree that way. And it's interesting. And the police are experimenting. How can they turn this town into an area they can control? It's not that they're evil. It's not that they're sadistic. It's not that they're malicious in any profound way as people. But the imperatives of their job and the powers that they're given produce this deformation downtown. They produce it in town after town. You give a group of people power and guns, and then they will use it. They won't necessarily use it in circumstances that you'd like it used in. And that is something, unfortunately, that our city council is completely blind to, or perhaps even worse, favors. It's hard to tell. More of the council meeting.
Comments to the motion? Mike?
I don't know if this is, I don't have a strategy around this issue, so I hope my comments aren't counterproductive, but I went down and went shopping yesterday and bought something at Pacific Trading, and there was nothing out front happening, and it was very pleasant, and there was lots of nice things to select, and I bought something for my wife, and I don't know that there's a war going on. Even with all the problems that are going on, I'm not sure that it's a daily constant war, and so more than at least 50% of the time you go down there, you're likely just to find a nice place to go shopping and find stuff that you might want to purchase. So I think somehow it may be counterproductive, the degree which we're sort of letting people know that there's like this crisis happening. It's there some of the times. When it's going on, it's nasty, but it's not most of the time.
True.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, passes 6-0. Thank you. So we'll move on to an oral report on closed session. Mr. Barasone?
Thank you, Mayor Riley.
With pomp and with pride. If I had a penis, I'd pamper it proper. I'd stay in the tub and use me as the stopper. If I had a penis, I'd take it to parties, stretch it and stroke it and shove it at smarties. I'd take it to pet shows and teach it to stay. I'd stuff it in turkeys on Thanksgiving Day. I'd rival my buddies bikes and sports cars and stick shifts. I'd shower my spire with girlies and gifts. I'd peek around corners, I'd aim at my toilet, I'd poke it at foreigners and soap it and oil it. If I had a penis, I'd run to my mother, comb out the hair and compare it to brother. I'd lance her, I'd knight her, my hands would indulge. Hands would sink tighter and buckle and bulge. A penis to plunder, a penis to push, 'cause one in the hand is worth one in the bush. A penis to love me, a penis to share, to pick up and play with when nobody's there. I sit like a guy, I straddle the chair, I play with my fly, albeit with care. I dip it in chocolate, I stick it in sockets, I stroll to the movies with hands deep in pockets. I stick it in vacuums on vacant verandas, gas-guzzling bottles and poodles and pandas and puddles and drain pipes and doggies and ditches, pools and puddles and bottles and bitches, zucchinis and zebras, tomatoes, tomatoes and pineapple pumpkins and gulches and grottos and melons and marshmallows. Gloves and gorillas, Slurpees and slippers, Chinooks and chinchillas. A penis to plunder, a penis to push, 'cause one in the hand is worth one in the bush. A penis to love me, a penis to share, to pick up and play with when nobody's there. If I had a penis, I'd climb every mountain. I'd force it on females, I'd pee like a fountain. If I had a penis, I'd still be a girl. But I'd make much more money and conquer the world.
Brings a conclusion to this afternoon's agenda items, so we'll now have oral communications from the community on items not on today's agenda. You'll have 3 minutes to speak. Come forward, please. Let me ask first, hang on 1 second, Mr. North, since you spoke last time, we'll take the gentleman behind you first, because priority is given to people who did not speak during oral communications at our last meeting.
Our translator's here.
We do have a translator here. I didn't realize that. Sorry, we do have.
And what you're hearing now is the oral communications section of the July 8th meeting, which was held at the end of the session. So people who wanted to speak at oral communications wouldn't know when to come. And that was the fate of some of us. Just happened to come back at that time and were able to speak. And you're going to hear our speaking at that meeting.
Ed and I both do.
Excuse me.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. My name is Mercedes Sheldon, and I am the interpreter translator here, and I'm here to avail my services to anyone that needs any help.
But of course, no one was there who spoke Spanish, very few people who spoke English, because of the way the council had arranged the agenda.
In interpretación.
Gracias. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mercedes. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, come forward, please.
Hi, my name is Matthew Hartog, and I have a particular interest in the so-called move-along law. I think it's a really bad idea. I think that the combination of this law and the exemption zones shows a real clear case of prejudice to favor some views, some political views over others in the city of Santa Cruz. The other thing I'm really concerned about is the privatization of public space, which has been occurring at a steady pace in the city of Santa Cruz, the latest incident of which is moving that railing in front of the Pacific Trading Company. So the city's strategy in terms of social problems seems to be not to prosecute the real offenses, you know, the urination, the drug dealing, and so on, but to eliminate any sort of pedestrian space so that by doing that, these offenses might reduce in character. character. So, I mean, the ultimate result of that would be to eliminate all public seating spaces downtown. I don't know where the, whether the council is going in that direction, but that seems to be the general trend. The other thing I'm really concerned about is that how merchants have power to effectuate the movement of public space downtown, the spending of public money when the city is in deep deficit. In the city of San Francisco, when some poor schnook that owns a donut shop calls the cops 20 times because drug dealers are causing a problem outside of his store, what they do, and I don't necessarily agree with this, but, you know, it gets to be a problem for the city. Well, what the city does is they fine the business owner. Well, how about using that? How about recouping your costs that way by fining the Pacific Trading Company instead of fining the people who were previously sitting on that railing? You know, the third thing, which is really ironic, is that there was this whole discussion at one point about how when people sat on planters, they were destroying plants, and the plant lobby, the plant stakeholders, were really concerned about that. And now, with the reconstruction of that railing, the workers went into that planter and they completely destroyed the foliage in that planter, trampled all over it. So the foliage concern didn't seem to be a concern in that area when social control is really the underlying concern. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Next speaker. Actually, Mr. Williams, the gentleman behind you didn't speak last time. If you wouldn't mind, I'd like him to go first since he didn't have an opportunity to speak last week. Would you come forward, please, if you'd like to address us?
Social control. Hello, my name is John Tilkenny. I live over on 38th Avenue in Santa Cruz. I just wanted to comment that I thought that the behavior of the Santa Cruz Police Department recently has been kind of outrageous. They've been giving tickets to people for not moving along after an hour. Been giving tickets for people for having a television played at conversational volume. And getting tickets for leaning on the edge of a planter, which was formerly a seating area. I just think that's pretty outrageous. Anyway, I guess I also wanted to comment that because of this behavior, I decided to locate my business mailing address for pagesincolor.com. in Soquel instead of in Santa Cruz, because I just can't stomach spending $155 for a business license fee for my new business in the city of Santa Cruz. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker would be Ms. Connival, since she didn't speak last time. Hi again.
Hi. I'm Sherry Connival. I feel really sad. I feel sad about what's going on in front of Pacific Trading Company. I feel sad for the community to have lost that seating. I felt sad today when I watched an Asian grandmother wheeling her grandchild in a stroller, and she came to that planter and wanted to sit down in the shade, and she looked at it and she felt the railing because apparently she didn't know it had been moved, and there wasn't a space for her to sit down in the shade. I feel sad for Carolyn and the staff, because I think what they wanted was to create what they saw as a more peaceful atmosphere outside their store. That's not what's happened. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And I really can't go into the whole history, but I've been really involved in what's happened in front of Pacific Trading Company from really the first week that they moved to that location. And they began calling the police whenever a musician would start to play sitting on the planter outside. And I gave them materials about the show we'd done. I tried to talk to them. And I really believe this is a situation that has been co-created and that there's not a victim in this situation. They have co-created the situation, and it's really sad that this is the way it's turned out. And I have said all along to the activists involved that I don't support targeting the merchants. The city council makes decisions, the staff makes recommendations, and that's where I think the heat belongs, is on you and on the staff, and not on the merchants. I believe they have the right to express their opinion, and then you make decisions about how public resources are used or not used. Obviously, I disagree with your decisions. I'm glad to have gotten the information that there's no intention to move the railings on the other planters. I'm glad to hear that. In the email I sent to you, I also raised a couple other issues I would just like to briefly refer to. I have noticed, and a number of my neighbors have noticed, that in the past few months, every city vehicle of every department has begun to display the American flag, either flying it in a window or on a side panel. I would like to know who gets to make that decision. The American flag right now is a very charged symbol because patriotism is being confused with nationalism. And nationalism, I believe, is a very destructive force. It's very uncomfortable to me that all of a sudden all of our vehicles have that flag displayed. And I'm curious if that decision came from you or at the department level. How was that decision made to spend those resources and that labor? And I actually don't think that if that were put to a vote of the people, it would pass. I've also suggested to the mayor in the past, and I want to suggest this here, that I think it would be really wonderful if the city of Santa Cruz could fly an Earth flag in every location where we currently fly the American flag. And I would help in researching and finding those flags and getting them up. I think that would be a wonderful message to be sending, that everywhere people went, they would also see the Earth flag and understand that we are citizens of the Earth as well as of this nation and have a responsibility to the whole planet. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Thank you for being so agreeable.
Not a problem. Name to please.
Charlie, you should introduce yourself.
I guess I just want to re-reference some of the stuff, comments I made a couple weeks ago about the six-month review of the downtown ordinances promised back in January. So another friendly reminder that we'd like to see something else on the agenda as well the next meeting, given that you are going to be gone for the month of August and it's just kind of going to percolate and simmer. Some of those things include the positive signage and some printed materials from city staff. I mean, some of the stuff can just maybe be pushed along. There's been reference to this permit process, and my understanding, when Tom Noddy approached Parks and Rec for a permit, they kind of looked at each other blankly and go, what permit? So that needs to be clarified. Also, what I can consider prosecutorial discretion, that language around enforcement still needs to be dealt with, and I'd like to see that. Also, an amendment that was supposed to be written to exempt maybe guitar cases and cups and smaller devices from the display device ordinance has yet to come forward. There was also discussions back then in January about placement, the 10-foot rule, the back to building versus back to street was identified as a possible concern. Once again, that's probably part of the review process that needs to happen around the ordinances. And I guess I just have to say something about the specific trading company stuff, since everybody's weighing in on this. It seems like it's a perfect time for the council to, instead of further polarize the position by taking such a strong pro-merchant side in this, that this is an opportunity for the council to use the authority that had been referenced back then to use the authority of the council to mediate disputes, actually get merchants and performers and or merchants and tablers was specifically mentioned as that something you guys could do. And so I think you're sending a really polarizing message, and you're continuing to foster an us versus them mentality, and it's not going to go anywhere with that. There's got to be some kind of dialogue process created for this to move forward to some kind of resolution. I just want to like point out that your actions are not necessarily contributing to that process. They're going the other direction. Thank you.
Thank you for very thoughtful comments. Next speaker, please.
Council members, Robert Norris, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Several council members made comments which were not accurate, which actually I can correct now. Councilmember Porter drew out a litany of horrors. I actually have here the emails from the Pacific Trading Company from Ananda Heinrich. Here are some of the complaints she had. 12302, a group of guys were panhandling with a live rat on the planter in front of the store. Called police. There was a man playing guitar out front. 12502, a man stepped into the front of the store and plugged a video camera into our outlet. The security tags were on it. The police were called. 12-6, guitar musician in front of store was too loud. We called the host to ask the musician to move down. Now, there are some complaints here that are a matter of concern for the community, but there are many, many that are not. And for the council to adopt a secret process where it goes behind the backs of the community, and I mean through their staff, through Martine Bernal, and through interdepartmental meetings, is completely inappropriate and produces the kind of polarization that I think the community wants to avoid. So I simply draw the community's attention to the fact that Mr. Kennedy's left the room, but he was also giving misstatements about Mr. Noddy's arrest. He was not arrested for bubble blowing. He was arrested for juggling. He was simply trying to ascertain what the rules were, and he couldn't get a straight answer from either the hosts or the police, and the city attorney had different opinions as well. What we have here is a situation where the downtown ordinances don't work. They're prompting hostility. They're prompting all kinds of abuse downtown. And you do have intimidation and harassment downtown, as was amply documented to your council last summer. You have police harassment. That was brought to your attention. Mayor Riley has completely ignored that and went right on to pass the merchant agenda with the downtown ordinances. And now she's urging you all to shop at the Pacific Trading Company. Is that some sort of solution? You know, I've got nothing against the Heinrichs. I actually had a nice chat with Carolyn today. But I'm damned if a couple of merchants and a merchant association is going to run a bunch of people and the entire community off of the public spaces in downtown Santa Cruz. And I don't think that the council that misrepresents this by stating, for example, as Michael Rotkin had, that they're not going to be down there timing you with a watch. There's not going to be any problems for people who move along. When false statements like this pass and the police department hears them and knows what they're getting is a blank check. So all I can say is I invite the community to come down and make up its own mind about what's going on at the Pacific Trading Company. Watch how the police are behaving toward peaceful petitioners down there. Come to the meal. We're having a meal noon Thursday, day after tomorrow down there. Carolyn Heinrich is invited. Mayor Riley is invited. The entire community is invited. We want to reclaim our rights in Santa Cruz.
Your time,
thank
sir.
You.
Would anyone else from the community like to address us during oral communications? Mr. Porter?
I would like to address the Council on Oral Communications and just say that from my personal knowledge, the suggestion that the downtown ordinances that we passed in the last 2 years are somehow a conspiracy, backroom conspiracy between merchants and council members and city staff, that notion is simply not true.
Now, Councilmember Porter here, I take the liberty of interrupting him, is correct. The downtown ordinances were not a conspiracy. They were a rush, bam, slam-bam job done in 2 weeks with four unprecedented council meetings where the city council ignored all the testimony of the critics and then subsequently ignored all the testimony of their own commissions on things like exemption zones. But I wasn't talking about the downtown ordinances. If you recall, I was talking about I was talking about the planter railing, and I was talking about how merchants at the Pacific Trading Company, through a private behind-the-scenes process, were able to get city money through the police department appropriated to destroy seating space without any public process whatsoever. And that is nothing but the simple truth. Now, perhaps Councilmember Porter confused my remarks, but I note that he doesn't seem to be too accurate in his characterizations. And, of course, am I surprised? No, not particularly.
false. Frankly, there was very little input from the vast majority of merchants, and the email logs that were provided by one merchant, I think are very factual, and I don't see anything wrong with them reporting things that come to their attention. The portions that were read were not the hideous, offensive parts that I saw, and I guess nobody in good taste would read those because they're so disgusting. I used just a few of the words a few moments ago, but we made the change on the planter downtown to cure a disgusting situation, and I think the disgusting situation has largely been cured, but now there's another disgusting situation where a group of people is targeting a single merchant, and that's completely unjust. I agree with Sherry Connable's comment that the council is the correct group of people to make those comments to and not to a single merchant. I think it's unfathomable that this so-called protest would be proceeding.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. Mr. Ruckin?
I just want to share my perception that there's a complete disconnect between the reality on Pacific Avenue, which is generally attractive, full of lots of people doing all different kinds of things, including political tabling, playing music, juggling, and all kinds of other activities, and what we hear in these council chambers that make it sound like we got some kind of a fascist police state that's repressing everybody with a thought or an attempt to sort of be involved in arts activities. It's ridiculous. And the fact that a small number of people can get up and, of course, have the right to say whatever they would like at these meetings doesn't make it the truth about what's actually going on. And I would say anybody who wants to go down to Pacific Avenue, night or day, will find that generally it's a very attractive place with lots of fun stuff going on, including these different kinds of activities that people are concerned about. If somebody gets in somebody's face, makes objection involved in objectionable kinds of activities, not for the content of their speech, but what they're doing, yelling at customers when they try and enter a store, screaming at the staff people, trying to harass some people, and it happens for a small period of time, yes, the police will start a stopwatch. I would hope if they don't, I would be upset. They would start a stopwatch and try and stop that kind of behavior within an hour. They have every legal right to do it under the ordinances that we passed. It would be the appropriate use of discretion in our downtown. The fact that they've done that to a couple of individuals doesn't mean that they're automatically starting stopwatches on every political table that gets set up. From everything I can tell, and it doesn't mean that there's any special privileges for particular points of view. I see a wide range of people petitioning from the left and the right, asking for people to support their causes of one kind or another, and I don't see our police making political choices or deciding to support this person or that person based on how they're dressed, on their lifestyles, whether they are homeless or live in a house. They're making decisions based on people's behavior. And when people act outrageously, somebody will complain, and based on that complaint, they will probably go out and use a stopwatch, and if they're violating the distance rules, I hope they'll enforce those. And so the rules are basically about behavior and how it's enforced or not enforced. And in my experience, downtown Pacific Avenue is a very attractive place, and our police are not involved in abuse for the most part. It's not to say there's never been a problem with a police officer, but overall, they're doing a really good job and making it a very safe and attractive place for people to go.
Thank you.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, me neither. Thank you all.
And Councilmember Rotkin's comments that lead one to think that perhaps if people are behaving in an illegal way, harassing customers or screaming at other people in the stores, that there isn't some remedy. There is a remedy. This is called disturbing the peace. This is called assault on someone, if you're putting them in fear of their safety. There are laws to deal with it. There have always been laws. No, rather he is suggesting that because the arrests that have happened because of abusive conduct by petitioners rather than because they've simply said, we're not going to move along because this is unconstitutional to restrict a basic right to a table on the mall. Most people have been moving along, and the police have regularly been telling people, though not for the last week, interestingly enough, but prior to that, you have to move along after an hour. This included people who were tabling with voter registration stuff up near the Cinema 9 Theater. And I have them on tape for that as well. I mean, Councilman Reckon is simply wrong, and I tried to talk to him about this afterward, but he ducked out the back and went his own way, so couldn't really get through to him. But could I anyway? I don't know. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And you're welcome to call in if you have any thoughts. Haven't had too many people too interested. I maybe have just gone on too long on these topics. I don't know. I'm hoping on my next show, which is Sunday, starts at 9:30 and goes to 1. We're going to have some interesting dialogue with Joe Williams and with Tom Noddy, who are coming back to kind of maybe preview the next city council meeting. And at that time, we'll also have, which is on Tuesday, and we'll have some the agenda. Hopefully, so you can actually look at what's coming up on that city council meeting. I don't know about the rest of you, but I've been a little bit concerned about the... Well, I'm sure you have been too, I imagine, those of you listening to the show, the ongoing and escalating war in Iraq, or U.S. occupation in Iraq, the fact that, of course, more and more Americans are being killed, more and more Iraqis are being killed, and we still can't get Representative Farr to, or I guess even Representative Kucinich's people, for that matter, to weigh in with a commentary about getting out of Iraq. I know that Kucinich did state that the U.S., he asked the U.S. to stop the war and pull out in early April before the war was over, but I haven't heard, or it's not clear to me that he's made that same statement after the war was, quote, officially over or unofficially over, or they'd occupied Baghdad. But, of course, in the last day, the National Guard has been called up, and the death toll has either reached or surpassed that of the Persian Gulf War, the first Persian Gulf War, and it's just a... There's also indications that Bush's popularity is continuing to drop, hopefully to plummet soon. Here's a story from the London Observer, actually the Guardian Unlimited. It's kind of a subsection of the London Observer called Peace at Any Price. And it's today, it's actually tomorrow's story because it's tomorrow in England, Friday right now, it's, even though it's Thursday today here. One of the many uncomfortable truths about war is that military campaigns can destroy in days the human capital and physical assets which took decades to create. It is now clear that the financial price of putting Iraq back together again is high and rising at an alarming rate. Keeping 150,000 U.S. troops in Iraq is costing $4 billion a month, double the $2 billion forecast as recently as April. In Britain, figures show that the Treasury spent $1 billion before the first shot was fired. The current bill faced by U.K. United Kingdom taxpayers for 11,000 soldiers in Iraq runs at about £150 million a month. At such levels of spending, British troops could remain there at their current levels for a little less than 2 years before the $3 billion pot originally set aside for this conflict is empty. With many friends and allies badly bruised by Washington's insistence on bending, that's a nice way of putting it, international law to launch the war, few are currently prepared to help out with offers of troops. Instead, the cost burden will continue to be borne by America and Britain. The war and its messy, increasingly bloody aftermath have cost the United States $48 billion so far. At the current rate of spending, if the occupation were to last 4 years, General Tommy Franks says is needed, the bill will be $200 billion for the U.S. troops alone. But America and, by implication, Britain have signed up not just for the destruction of Iraq, but for its salvation. Given the ambition to reshape Iraq as a democracy, Iraq needs a Marshall Plan. The Marshall original was used to lift Western Europe from the ruins of World War II and was worth $2,000 over 4 years to each citizen in the recipient countries. At this level of spending, Iraq will need another $50 billion. But Iraq is a nation bereft of social capital and civic infrastructure required for democracy to flower, and the latest estimates are that at least $90 billion will be required. Nation building on this scale needs cash quickly. This will not come from Iraq's depleted oil industry, which is not pumping, but dribbling crude. Without a new UN resolution, the rest of the world will refuse to help. The U.S. already faces a growing budget deficit. Britain will also see a black hole open up in its accounts as the costs unmet by others mount up in Iraq. With public services to improve, the government would then face a choice of tax increases, spending cuts, or interest rate rises. The run-up to an election would be a bad time to discover that war can be cheap, but peace is expensive. Here's a story, U.S. Confused by Iraq's Quiet War, Jonathan Steele and Michael Howard in Baghdad. As armed attacks on U.S. troops in Iraq increase and the Pentagon announces that the crack troops of its most experienced infantry division will stay in the country indefinitely, the one certainly about the groups carrying out the assaults is the effect they are having. One certainty is confusion. We're facing a combination of Ba'athists, Fedayeen, and ex-intelligence services operating without central control on a loose basis, the U.S. administrator in Iraq, Paul Bremer, told reporters this week. None of the people detained by coalition forces for carrying out attacks on U.S. soldiers said they were motivated by religion or money, the former counterterrorism expert added. The attacks are conducted by professionals. I have confidence that we shall impose our will on these renegades. John Appazade, the new head of U.S. Central Command, called it a classical guerrilla-type campaign, the first time they've used that phrase in the paper, and said, I believe there's mid-level Ba'athist, Iraqi intelligence service people, special security organization people, special Republican Guard people that have organized at the regional level in the cellular structure. It's low-intensity conflict in our doctrinal terms, but it's war, however you describe it. In other words, according to the new head of the military in Iraq, the new U.S. head, it's only these bad guys who are attacking the U.S. troops, these evil Saddam leftovers. Continuing, these assertive analyses bear surprisingly little resemblance to the views of other sources, including U.S. Army commanders in the field, leading some to speculate that there is more spin than substance to them. Colonel Eric Wesley, executive officer of the 3rd Infantry Division's 2nd Brigade, believes most of the attackers are motivated by current grievances rather than lost privileges. Many are hired guns working for profit. They are disaffected people from various parts of society, said at his base near Fallujah. They may be impoverished or somehow affected by the war and the coalition, wanting revenge for the loss of a family member. They may be people who have been taught their whole life to hate the West and have extremist views. Whatever the cause, he believes them to be ignorant of U.S. intentions in Iraq and thus an exploitable group. The question is, who's paying them? Who's funding them, exploiting them, he said. It could be third country nationals who want to see Iraq destabilized. We have indications of Islamic fundamentalism, both foreign and domestic. It could be people from the former regime who stand to lose a lot from democracy. I deliberately avoid the term Ba'athist because I'm not convinced there's opposition across the whole of Iraq. Colonel Wesley disagrees with Mr. Bremer's view that these are professional attackers, citing the relatively few soldiers hit compared to the number of attacks. Our indications are that the majority are not well-trained. Their tactics are relatively crude and elementary. Their marksmanship is poor. The incidence of rocket-propelled grenades and AK-47s being on target is rare. Troops in the brigade agree that ambushes on convoys are usually hasty and disorganized. Staff Sergeant Anthony Joseph said they pop up with an RPG and fire. They know that if they take time to aim, we will spot them and shoot. Since May 1st, when President Bush declared the war over, the attackers have killed 33 American soldiers. There are currently about 12 attacks a day, and actually that's a low figure. I've heard more than 20 attacks, nearly all of them on U.S. convoys. That's a day, 12 attacks a day as a low figure. Three soldiers have been shot point blank in operations which have the hallmarks of professionalism, according to Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, commander of U.S. ground forces in Iraq. One soldier was killed by a sniper. There have been no suicide attacks, but several remote-controlled bombs. Ramadi, about 20 miles west of Fallujah, is one of the tensest towns in Iraq. The 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment's base in Saddam Hussein's former palace by the Euphrates River has been...